This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You are listening to Preconceived, where we examine the preconceptions that shape how we view the world and the paradigms by which we live our lives.
Hey, everybody. I'm Zale Mednick, and welcome to another episode of Preconceived. The average life expectancy for a human in this world is 73.2 years. According to the latest United Nations Population Division estimates, average life expectancy is as high as 85 years in Hong Kong and Japan, is 82.96 in Canada, 81.77 in the United Kingdom, and 79.11 in the United States. These numbers are significantly higher across the board than they were several decades ago. But with new emerging science and research, what if the average life expectancy were to see an even more drastic increase? What if it became commonplace to live well past 100 years old? Is this plausible? Where do we currently stand in what has become known as the science of life extension? I'm joined today by a leading pioneer in this field, Dr. Stuart J. Olshansky. Dr. Olshansky is a professor of public health at the University of Illinois in Chicago. He is a research associate at the Center of Aging at the University of Chicago and is the co-founder and chief scientist at Lapidus Solutions. The focus of his research is on estimates of the upper limits of human longevity, exploring the health and public policy implications associated with individual and population aging, forecasts of the size, survival, and age structure of the population, pursuit of the scientific means to slow aging in people, and global implications of the reemergence of infectious and parasitic diseases. In 2016, Dr. Olshansky was honored with the Donald P. Kent Award from the Gerontological Society of America, the Irving S. Wright Award from the American Federation for Aging Research, and he was named the Next Avenue Influencer in Aging. All right, so Dr. J. Olshansky, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks. Delighted to be here.
This is an exciting topic. It's a fun one. It's an interesting one. I'm sure you agree. You devoted so much of your life to it.
And it influences everyone, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. There's no way to escape but being influenced by this topic. There's a lot of people who probably are listening to this who don't know what life extension is.
Well, look, all of us experienced life extension in the last, I mean, everyone that's been around in the last century and a half experienced rather dramatic life extension. I mean, back in 1900, life expectancy was about, you know, somewhere between 45 to 50 in today's developed countries. It's now up to close to 80. So guess what? Radical life extension has already occurred. You know, a 30-year increase in life expectancy is dramatic. Now, if you're talking about the future, life extension is a different game than the one that we played in the past. In the past, we went through the process of reducing early age mortality. We saved children from dying from infectious diseases, communicable diseases, and they had a chance to live routinely now past the age of 65. So now the game that we're playing is a different. Now we have the biological process of aging that gets in the way of any sort of additional life extension. Not just disease reduction, but aging itself is marching on, even independent of any progress that we make against major diseases. So don't expect the same type of radical life extension that we experienced in the past to happen again. It's a totally different game. You know, adding 3 or 4 decades to the life of an infant is a lot different than adding 3 to 4 decades to the life of a 60 or 70 year old. And that's the game that we're playing today. It's far more difficult to intervene in aging than it is to intervene in communicable diseases.
When we're talking about intervening in aging, so going from 70 to 110, for example, we're talking about halting the aging process or slowing the aging process to a degree so that you'd maybe not look like you were 90 or feel like you're 90 when you're 90 if you're going to end up going to 110?
So first of all, 70 to 110 isn't going to happen. Mathematically, it's almost impossible. Let me explain why this is the case. And I actually demonstrated this 32 years ago in an article in Science that nothing has changed since then. The mathematics of the life have been unaltered since life tables were discovered and developed hundreds of years ago. So, you know, once you push out survival into later and later ages, the risk of a broad range of diseases and disorders compete for the lives of individuals. This is called competing risks. So once you get out into your 70s, 80s, 90s, you accumulate all of these diseases in the body. And influencing them one at a time does not have that much of an influence on duration of life. So many of us, myself included, have said, yeah, we need to start slowing the biological process of aging itself, which gives rise to those diseases. But even when you do that, you're not gaining large increases in life expectancy. I mean, keep in mind, large increases in life expectancy would require people routinely living past the age of 122. Which is the longest that any human has ever lived. There's no evidence that that's going to happen anytime soon. Anyone who comes up with a number higher than 122 is making it up out of thin air. Life expectancies, you know, beyond about 85 are plausible, but any sort of radical increase is not likely to happen. If not because we can't reduce the risk of death and not because we can't slow aging, but because we can't manipulate the life table enough. We can't generate enough person years of life to move the metric of life expectancy enough to get up, you know, up to 100 or higher. It's just not going to happen while we're alive anyway.
So the science that's looking into trying to make that happen, because on a cursory level, it sounds like there are people who are trying to look at how can we extend life.
So keep in mind, the work that's going on in aging science and aging biology now is not, for the most part, with few exceptions, designed to make people live longer. You know, you do get some people who talk about radical life extension. They're making all these numbers up out of thin. The work that's going on, the legitimate aging science, is designed to extend healthy life, not length of life. And so we're trying to make it, you know, take 80 years to turn 60 or 90 years to turn 70. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to live a whole lot longer than you do now, although I think we probably would live longer, but not necessarily a lot, but we probably would experience a significant extension of the period of healthy life, which is what those of us in aging science are pursuing. I mean, that's really what we want. And if you talk to older individuals, that's what they want. We're not going to turn into younger versions of ourselves using any of the technologies that are out there today. We can lower the risk. We can slow the process. You know, when you get people talking about these radical increases in life expectancy, radical might not even be the right word. I think that's being too nice. You know, radical is what we experienced in the past. Unrealistic is when you get people talking about, you know, 120, 150 year life expectancies for national populations. They honestly have no clue what they're talking about. It's not even mathematically possible to get those numbers out there. And look, even if an intervention was discovered today that slowed aging, however much it slowed aging, we still wouldn't have the ability to demonstrate how much longer it could make us live, because we would have to wait, you know, 30, 40, 50 years or more to know that it's actually true. So claims of radical life extension that go out past 100 are scientifically unverifiable. And people who make those claims cannot justify anything that they're coming up with using the tools of science. So I strongly object to people using that language, making up numbers. Look, either we're doing science or we're not. If we're not doing science, you can make up any number you want. If we are doing science, stop making up numbers.
Oddly, I think that might be the biggest misconception. I mean, there's so many people who speak about it. It's like trendy now to talk about life extension, taking certain supplements, taking certain medications, but you're a world expert on this. But coming into this, I still, and I think many people I've heard just in casual talk, oh yeah, I plan to, you know, I'm living my life in a certain way so I can live to, you know, in 120, 130. And the way it's kind of become normalized in conversation by some people, even though it sounds bizarre, it speaks to the myth that's maybe been created by,
it is,
I don't want to say false science, but science, like you're saying, that isn't really true science.
Well, so here's part of the problem. In order to make this science happen, this science that's designed to slow biological aging or influence it in some way, you have to have money to drive the science and to drive the research. And some of the investors that are investing in aging science want to hear that the technology is going to come soon. Usually, you know, 10 years is the number that they want to hear, and that it's going to, you know, either forestall aging completely or radically increase life expectancy. Look, if you have any sense of history of the anti-aging industry, read the first chapter of my book, The Quest for Immortality, where I go back several thousand years to claims that have been made thousands of years ago that are nearly identical to the claims that we're hearing today of some sort of radical life extension that is about to happen beginning 10 years from now. What happens is that the people that are doing the work often exaggerate the effects or consequences or timing of the research as a way to get money. And I understand that. I, you know, it's just that those of us that deal in the real world, you know, have to bring these folks back down to reality. And that's really what we've been doing. And you don't have to exaggerate and you don't have to embellish the story to justify advancing research on aging. To the contrary, we have plenty of evidence to indicate that if we fail to slow the biological process.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Process of aging or influence it in some way, that it is, there is potential for great harm to come to future generations of older individuals that make it out into regions of the lifespan where frailty and disability are extremely high. In other words, if we don't succeed in slowing aging, we may very well see dramatic increases in Alzheimer's disease, other neurological problems, you know, the breakdown of the spine. There's a whole suite of things that go wrong with these bodies that we can't fix yet, including the mind as being one of the most important ones. So we don't need to exaggerate. We don't need to embellish. There's plenty of evidence to indicate that slowing aging is the best way of improving public health going forward. I call it primary prevention with a capital P, and that's how we should be presenting it. No need to exaggerate. No need to embellish.
So slowing aging may be a better term than talking about it with the fancier life extension.
Yeah. Life extension is not the goal. Health extension is the goal.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So let's talk a little bit about health. We'll call it health extension. In terms of biologically, in terms of the real science that you think is credible out there, what are some of the main leaps we've made or discoveries that have maybe been found in regards to slowing the aging process?
Look, I don't know, nor does anyone know what's going to work yet. Nobody knows yet. The clinical trials have not started. Metformin is close to being one of the first compounds. I know senolytic compounds are in clinical trials at the Mayo Clinic. And there's some really promising work going on there. The study, you know, the idea that slowing aging is plausible is not hypothetical. It's not a theory. It's here. Already, all you have to do is look around to individuals that have already made it out into their 80s, 90s, and 100 plus superagers, you know, individuals that make it out with their mind and body intact. Those folks are already experiencing slower biological aging. The biological time clock is ticking more slowly for them. What is it that's influencing that slower clock in their bodies? So some of the most interesting work that's going on now is studying the genetics of exceptionally long-lived individuals. And it's because it's already here and it's humans. We don't have to worry about going from fruit flies or nematodes or mice or, you know, other primates to humans. It's here already, and it's measurable, and it can be seen and observed. And researchers are already studying the genetics of these long-lived individuals. So it's not hypothetical. It's here now. And I think that's some of the most exciting research. Now, don't get me wrong, the story of telomeres and telomere shortening may play a role going into the future. The study of senolytic compounds may play a role. Personally, I think we should be pursuing them all. All of these research projects, you know, parabiosis, you know, there's some interesting work going on there. We don't know which one of these pathways is going to work. And so my view is, pursue them all. Just let's see which one yields some sort of benefit. I don't think they should be done sequentially, or they should be done all at once, which I think is why we're getting such a large influx of money into the field. And that's how, in my view, how that money should be spent. Let's take a shotgun approach. It's sort of like what happened when we, you know, went after vaccines for COVID. We didn't know which one was going to work, so we pursued them all. Some did work, some didn't work, but you wouldn't know unless you tried them all at once. And I think that that's the approach that we should be taking going forward. So I cannot answer the question on whether it's telomere shortening or, you know, senolytic compounds, or, and no, neither can anyone else, by the way.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
The sense I'm getting from you is that the importance of the work that you're doing and why it's important to research this is, like you said, different than what a lot of people coming into this podcast might have thought. It's the fact that we're already here. We already have had this radical life extension. So that's why it's so important to try to make this extended life that we already have a healthier life. And that's why we're going after aging.
You don't need me anymore. You just said it perfectly. Okay. I mean, I think that is the exact message going forward. Radical life extension has already, so we're now dealing with the consequences of the new exchange that we're working on. I actually published a paper on this topic, I think a couple of years ago, where I was describing a deal with the devil, right? So the deal with the devil 150 years ago or so was, you know, I'll give you 30 years of life, but in exchange, you're going to get heart disease, cancer, stroke, and Alzheimer's disease, right? But you get to save the children.
That's where we are now.
Right. So that's exactly where we are now.
Yeah.
So I argue that the devil Mephistopheles has come back to us and said, I've got another deal for you. The deal today is I'm going to allow you to reduce the risk of heart disease, cancer, and stroke, what I gave you 150 years ago in exchange for saving your children. I'm going to allow you to reduce the risk of those diseases for smaller and smaller incremental increases in life expectancy. And I'm saying, don't sign the papers. That's a bad deal. And that's where we are today. We're facing a very, really bad deal of going after one disease at a time. And in fact, that's the reason why we need to go after aging. It's you said it perfectly. I couldn't say it any better.
Well, you're being kind, but thank you. I'm a doctor and I'm an ophthalmologist. So one of the things I've been thinking about when just over the past month, as I've known we would talk, is I see a lot of patients with multiple eye diseases. One of them is macular degeneration. Macular degeneration, it hits a lot of people and it can cause, not to scare people, it doesn't always, but for a lot of people, it can cause them to go pretty blind, can cause their lifestyle to be affected quite impactfully. And there's a lot of things in the body like that. Osteoporosis is one where obviously your bones, they weaken, you become more frail as you're older. There's so many things. So I'm thinking there's kind of two approaches, I guess. There's one, do you try to tackle each of these diseases individually or do you try to slow aging to prevent all these diseases together?
And the answer is the latter. You want to go after the systemic cause of most of the things that go wrong with human bodies as we get older. And failing to do so will reveal our Achilles heels. I mean, the Achilles heels, as you indicated, include this spine that deteriorates with the passage of time. I mean, look, you talk to just about anyone who's made it out to older ages. Not only have they shrunk, but they're experiencing usually lower back pain, some problem associated with the spine. And, you know, these spines can only last for so long. These muscle fibers can only last for so long. The neurons in the brain can only, these are our Achilles heels. And if we don't find a way to slow these Achilles heels and the rate at which progress towards non-functionality, we are in trouble. You know, the deal that the devil is offering us now is not a good one. And I think we need to get away from this disease-specific model. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying if you have heart disease, you have stroke, you have cancer, that you shouldn't go to a doctor and have it fixed. You should, absolutely. That's exactly what I would do. But I'm talking at the population. What we need to do is to understand the consequences of success and the game that we're playing today. And we need to realize that aging science is our only way out of this. And it's the only way to deal with the rather dramatic changes in health status that we may see in the coming decades as people get pushed out deeper and deeper into what I call the red zone, where frailty and disability is very high. I'd much rather see us compress the red zone than push out the envelope of survival. So life extension, as I said, is not the goal. And you're right, these diseases and disorders of the body aren't going to go away, even when we succeed in slowing aging. What it will do is it will push it out to later ages and hopefully compress it into a shorter duration of time before death occurs.
Fascinating paradigm of looking at it, which really I agree with you, life extension might not be the best phrase that is used for it and a bit deceptive. There are some medications on the market already, and I'm curious your thoughts on them if you have any regarding, there's things like Niagen and Basis, and we won't get into the science of it, but there are certain molecules that I guess are, I don't know if they're what kind of approval they've gone through or what kind of research process they've endured. But there certainly are some medications on the market that are advertised to younger people saying, if you start taking this when you're younger, it might work in preventing your aging process. Are those any things that you recommend to people, or is that really just all noise that's been from pharmaceutical companies?
Look, nobody should be conducting an experiment with their own. Their doctor certainly should not be conducting an experiment with their patients' bodies. For someone to say, yeah, this may work, it may not, it hasn't been tested for safety and efficacy, so we don't know. So seriously, it's like trying to use a newly developed vaccine to treat a disease without knowing how much to give yourself, whether it's safe, whether it works, what maybe it causes harm. Look, this happened back in 1980 when the exact same argument was used for growth hormone. And, you know, growth hormone was thought to be the panacea. It was supposedly going to reverse the aging process, make people stay younger longer, maintain their physical and mental vigor, their sexual health. It had all kinds of, connotations associated with slowing aging associated with it, until it was eventually discovered that it causes cancer. And it's probably not one of those things you actually want to do in, certainly in healthy older bodies. So the answer is no, I would not touch any of these interventions until they are properly tested using the methods and materials of science. And I think
you're saying none of these have actually met up to that, these products that have found their way onto the market.
Yeah, they're on the market. Some of them are being sold by scientists, which worries me because money is coming into play here. And that's part of the problem. Now, it's also part of the solution, right? You need the money to do the science. But what happens is, as soon as good science is done and there is potential, like let's just say senolytic compounds look really promising, would I touch any of them now? No, of course not. But after they are tested for safety and efficacy and shown to work, absolutely, I would be first in line to use this technology once it's shown to be safe and efficacious. That's how medicine works. That's how science works. And if we don't follow that pathway, we're just a bunch of charlatans, just like folks that have been selling snake oil for 3,000 years. Look, I call anti-aging medicine the second oldest profession. You know what the first oldest profession is, of course. Prostitution. Anti-aging has been around for thousands of years. People have been selling nonsense and pipe dreams for thousands of years with the claim that they, are close to coming up with some sort of therapeutic intervention. Look, we have probably never been closer to a genuine therapeutic intervention than we are today. So let's not let the nonsense and the hype and the money that people are trying to make get in the way of doing legitimate public health and real science.
I think the scary thing is, as you said, that scientists are promoting this. And you look, just a little research I did in looking into some of these compounds that I mentioned, like Niagen, Basis, and Metformin even, which is, for people who don't know, that's a very, very common medication that tons of people use for treating usually type 2 diabetes, sometimes type 1 as well. But there have been shown to be some anti-aging things. And there's a lot of scientists out there, if you look online, they would say, yeah, these are all good products you can use to kind of slow aging, which are not really in agreement with what you're saying. And you're saying, let's wait a second, hold on, let's follow the scientific process. Because if we don't do that, we don't know what the negative things are. These might cause more cancer, or maybe this will halt part of the aging process, but maybe make other things worse. We have no idea until we do the science.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. And I mean, can you think of anything worse than following the advice of somebody who says, yeah, take metformin now because we think it might slow the aging process. You take metformin and it causes some problem, 5-10 years down the line that you otherwise wouldn't have.
Which many medications do.
Exactly. Exactly. We don't often know what the long-term consequences are of some therapeutic interventions. And so we need to be patient. Now, I understand why some people are not patient. I actually have a very close relative of mine who's in his 90s, who keeps sending me information on all of the compounds that you're talking about, saying, should I be taking them? you know, these doctors have PhDs by their name and MDs by their name, and they sound very authoritative. Should I be taking them? I'm going, look, I'll be honest. I said, look, at your age, at 90, you know, if many of these issues were risk factors for you, you'd be dead already. You know, you're already likely to be a super ager. Would he benefit from the use of some of these interventions? Maybe. Could he be harmed by using some of these interventions? Maybe. We don't know. You know, so my public health advice, when I wear my public health hat, is I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole until the science is done. His view is, well, you know, I'm already at high risk. What do I have to lose? So I get that argument and I get that line of reasoning, and I understand why somebody who is facing a severe issue might be willing to say, what the heck? I've got nothing to lose. It's like people who may have an advanced form of cancer are willing to conduct an experiment on themselves, knowing that nothing else is working. So maybe there's an outside chance. I get that. But that's different than asking someone like you and I, who are healthy, to use an intervention that may or may not work and has the potential to do harm. Different story entirely.
Jay, what about some of the more potentially benign things? Like, I've heard about caloric restriction. I was going to define that. It's pretty easy for people to understand that. Restricting your calories. It's something that isn't really as obviously dangerous. There have been, I was going to say there have been some studies. I don't know. There is certainly some buzz out there that restricting your calories can maybe slow the aging process a little bit. Look, what are your thoughts on those?
Well, CR has been around forever. Right? People have known about the benefits of reducing caloric intake. I mean, goodness, there was a book written by Roy Walford on the 120-year lifespan based on caloric restriction. I remember talking to him about a year before he died, well before the age of 120, by the way, whether or not he thought he would live to 120. Now, he told me privately there's no way that he thought he would live that long. But then publicly, if you read his interviews, he would say, yeah, sure. I think it's possible to live that long if you reduce your caloric intake. And I said, look, I said, I'm pretty sure the initial studies done on CR used as control animals that were fed ad libitum, right? So they could eat as much as they want. And your frame of reference was not a normal population. Your frame of reference was an obese animal. So caloric restriction early on was showing the detrimental effects of gluttony rather than the life-extending benefits of caloric restriction. As I understand it, CR itself may not necessarily be where the benefit lies. It might be in intermittent fasting where, you know, the benefits of CR are not from the reduced caloric intake, but waiting, you know, 16 hours before you have your next meal. And that may be where the benefit is. Maybe you can reduce your caloric intake, maybe not, but it may be the intermittent fasting that's having the beneficial effect. And there's little doubt that there seems to be beneficial health effects from intermittent fasting. Probably, you know, there's always beneficial effects of not being obese and not carrying excess weight. So yeah, if you reduce your caloric intake so that you're not obese, it's probably very healthy for you. Is it going to yield radical life extension? No. There's no evidence that that's the case. Will it make you healthier while you're alive? Yeah, sure. There's plenty of evidence behind that. Don't expect CR to make people live a whole lot longer, but do expect people to live healthier if they reduce their caloric intake or use intermittent fasting. That, I mean, both of my kids are actually doing intermittent fasting. You know, they're 36 and 33. I tried it. Yeah, I could do it, but you know, I carry the FOXO3 gene and the APOE, E2E2 genetic polymorphisms. So I stand a pretty, and both of my parents lived into their 90s. So I'm pretty sure I can have a reasonable lifestyle and not have to reduce my caloric intake that way. Now, having said that, I've never smoked. I don't drink alcohol. And I do rarely anything in excess. So I understand the logic and the rationale behind what's needed to create a healthier lifestyle. Could I exercise more? Yeah, sure.
I was curious how much you're influenced by this on a daily basis because you work in this area. If you're constantly thinking about when you are doing anything unhealthy about aging.
I don't really do anything that's unhealthy in that regard. I mean, look, if there's any equivalent of a fountain of youth that exists today, it's exercise. And the benefits of exercise are immediate. It's not like you have to wait a day, a week, a month, a year for the benefits of exercise. They happen that day. In fact, they usually happen right after you're done exercising. So, I mean, I was a runner for, let's see, from 20 to about 60. So for about 40 years. And I had to stop because of spinal stenosis, right? So I would get severe pain in my back that would prevent me from walking. I mean, I really couldn't walk at all. So I had to stop running. So I replaced it with walking and elliptical. And it's all, you know, these things that happen to our bodies as we get older, it's all about adaptation. This is an adaptation, right? These glasses that I'm wearing, you know, that we didn't have these hundreds of years ago. We create these simple adaptations that allow us to pretty much deal with the consequences of the things that go wrong with our bodies, our eyes, our ears, muscle fibers, you know, exercise everything. Works.
Yeah.
No question.
You mentioned genetics before, and you clearly know the genes that you have in your body and your DNA, as you just illustrated. One thing that is obvious, but probably might not be obvious to people, is that a lot of this just has to do with people's genetics too, right? I mean, a lot of these people who are living to a higher age or staying healthier, a lot of it's out of our control, even if we are healthy, right? I mean, that's sad, but it's true.
Yeah. So look, there's little or no chance that you can live an exceptionally long life unless you won the genetic lottery at birth. You can't transform somebody who is destined to die in their 50s or 60s into somebody who's going to make it into their 80s, 90s, and 100 using medical technology. You can manufacture some survival time, but if you carry genes that put you at high risk of a broad range of diseases and disorders, there's not a whole lot that you can do. Now, having said that, you know, there are some interventions that do work that extend the life of some individuals. I mean, just use diabetes as an example, where individuals may be susceptible to either early onset or late onset type 1 or type 2 diabetes. And we do have interventions that can return lifespan back to normal, for those relatively normal for those individuals. But you're not making them live to 100, 120, 130 years. You're allowing the normal lifespan to express itself apart from that one consequence that the individual has. So yeah, there's lots that we can do, and we're getting better and better at it. But keep in mind, even when you go after those conditions one at a time, aging itself marches on in the background, underlying everything else that's going wrong with these bodies. And as right now, we don't have anything that can slow the aging process.
As you're speaking there, I'm reminded by an episode we did probably about a year and a half ago, where I got my genes tested, my genetic testing, and the results came back and I did not win the genetic lottery. I forget what it was, but he said I had six of something that was, I was six of six for the bad coin flip on one particular marker.
Well, so this is interesting. So as you may be aware, I created a company, or helped to create a company, called Wellspan Financial Partners, where we are helping people plan for their financial future using the power of genetics. So we actually have a manuscript that's coming out in the Journal of Gerontology later this year. The title, I think, is Applied Genetics and Wealth Management. And we're basically making it possible for people to upload their DNA, you know, the raw data, like from 23andMe or Ancestry. We analyze it, looking for genes that are associated with long life or Alzheimer's disease or a broad range of other disorders. And then as you are planning for your future, you could use that information in ways that can help you out. So for me, for example, given my genetic profile, I probably don't need to waste any money on long-term care insurance. Other people, by contrast, might require long-term care insurance based on their genetic profile only. If I've got a high chance of living into my 90s, I need to plan for retirement differently than if my chances of getting into my 90s are very low. So having this information available to you can be extremely valuable in your planning for the future. In fact, we published a book called Pursuing Wellspan just last year, where we explain how the science of aging can be used to help people plan more effectively for the future. It's not a way to slow aging. It's a way to learn more about yourself and what your prospects are for health span and lifespan going forward, and how you could use that information to better plan for your financial future in retirement. And it's to me, it's utilizing the science of aging in a way that's never been done before. And truth be told, this is the first article that will have ever been published on applied genetics and wealth management. No one's ever done it before.
That is super interesting. I'd love to post the link to that in our episode notes so people can read about that. And certainly I have the medical data about my genes, but I don't have the practical solutions to what I'm supposed to do with that. So, I mean, I'm definitely going to look into it for myself, because that's, if I have the information, I might as well put it to use, as opposed to just saying, oh, darn it, I didn't get the lottery. Well, how does that affect my practical choices in life?
And by the way, just because you didn't win the genetic lottery doesn't mean there isn't something you can do about it. Knowing that you didn't win the genetic lottery, maybe you need to monitor. Let's just say hypothetically, you carry genes that raised your risk of cardiovascular disease. So under those conditions, if you know that you have those higher risks, or for women, if they know that they have the higher risk of breast cancer, what do? You monitor more frequently, you monitor more carefully, you take care of your health in ways that, for example, may protect your heart more effectively, or may lower the risk of cancer more effectively. It's not like we can't intervene. There are things that we can do to lower risk. It's not the same as reducing risk to zero, but there are things that we can do today to lower risk. One of them, of course, is exercise. It seems to lower the risk of just about everything that's bad. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot that we can do today with the information that we have, even short of an aging intervention.
Well, Jay, you've given a different paradigm, I think, for the idea of life extension that most people might have thought of coming into this podcast, this idea that we've already kind of gotten to life extension, and now we need to deal with the devil that we signed, which we're living with now, and try to reduce the burdens and harms we're experiencing because we're living longer. And
that's right.
I think that's a
people
very
people that are listening don't see my head nodding up and down, but I'm going, yes, 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 I agree completely.
Jay, where can people learn more about you and the research that you're doing? And like I said, I'll put some notes in the episode notes.
Well, I do have a website, but I'll be honest with you, it's kind of out of date. I haven't really updated it in the last few years, but sjolshansky.com. Somebody can always email me at my university address, sjayo@uic.edu, or you could just Google my name.
And you'll find tons of stuff.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff. I've written on, remember, I published an article with colleagues in 2006 of Pursuing the Longevity Dividend. And in that article, we laid out the logic and the rationale for why it is that we need to slow biological aging. So if you want to learn more about that, just Google my name and longevity dividend, and it's not like I'm hard to find.
I found you, so it can't be too hard to find. Well, thank you so, so much for joining me, Dr. Jay Olshansky. I really, really appreciate you taking the time and chatting with me and our audience on a really incredible topic. Thank you.
My pleasure. I look forward to doing it again in another decade.
And thank you, everybody, very much for listening to another episode of Preconceived. Have a great decade. Bye-bye.